The following message and support for AHLA is provided by Berkeley Research Group, a global consulting firm that helps organizations advance in the areas of disputes and investigations, corporate finance, and strategy and operations. BRG helps clients stay ahead of what's next. For more information, visit thinkbrg.com.
Welcome to the fourth edition of the AHLA Fraud and Abuse Practice Group podcast. My name is Steve Bucci, and along with my co-host, Matt Wetzel, we hope to provide you with a monthly update on hot topics and key stories about the most pressing healthcare fraud and abuse issues in the United States. Each month, we will discuss trends in enforcement, critical updates in the law, and other important topics, and we hope to provide you with core insights on critical issues and how the government enforces the fraud and abuse laws, potential litigation that could impact how healthcare companies operate, and regulatory developments that may have an impact on your business or your clients' businesses. We also hope to share some practical considerations with you for companies seeking to comply with the law. Today's topic is focused on the impacts COVID-19 is having and will likely have on healthcare fair market value issues. Before we start our fourth podcast today, I'd like to start with some introductions. I'm Steve Bucci, a director in Berkeley Research Group's Health Analytics team. I and other members of my practice focus on litigation and other disputes, investigations, and compliance issues affecting healthcare entities. On behalf of BRG, I'd like to thank the AHLA for the opportunity to sponsor and support this podcast initiative. Matt Wetzel serves as vice chair for educational programming for the American Health Lawyers Association's Fraud and Abuse Practice Group. Matt is associate general counsel and compliance officer at Silicon Valley-based diagnostic testing company, Grail. Matt is a seasoned legal and compliance advisor, advocate, and strategist, as well as an enthusiastic relationship builder and dot connector. Our guest today is Jason Rukhaber. Jason is the founder and managing partner of Root Valuation, a provider of healthcare-focused valuation and financial advisory services to clients nationally. Jason is a frequent speaker, author, and instructor on healthcare valuation topics and is an active member of several professional and trade organizations. Jason holds the Chartered Financial Analyst, or CFA, designation. He's also an accredited senior appraiser in business valuation. Throughout his professional career, Jason has conducted well over 1,000 valuation engagements, ranging from basic to highly complex. Introductions being completed, Matt, I'll turn it over to you now to lead our discussion today about fair market value in the brave new COVID-19 world.
Well, thanks very much, Steve. Really appreciate that introduction and really happy to be with everybody on our continuing podcast on fraud and abuse issues with AHLA. Jason, welcome. We're happy to have you here. This is a really critical, important issue that we're addressing is we're all facing the new normal of COVID-19 and how we handle this sort of pandemic. The healthcare industry obviously is at the forefront of that, not only in terms of diagnosing and combating the disease itself, but trying to maintain the healthcare on other fronts for the American populace as well. So, Jason, you know, one of the big issues that I can imagine you're probably seeing in your business has to do with business valuation right now in the COVID-19 sort of immediate after effects and continuing effects. With the economy at a virtual standstill and government mandates on business closures and stay-at-home orders, what is the impact? What's the effect of these actions on business valuation, and what have you seen in your business?
Sure. Well, obviously, things are very dynamic and changing rapidly right now. So we're in a little bit of a let's wait and see what happens. Certainly the progress made on the relief package in the Senate today, I think, is a positive step in the right direction. But as you noted, business is at a standstill. And, obviously that affects all sectors of the economy, and certainly healthcare is no exception to that. The most immediate effect that I saw in my own practice as it pertains to business valuation is that, you know, in-process deals and valuation assignments related to transactional valuation, we hit the pause button just to stop and wait. And if you think about that, obviously there's other priorities that are shifting and deployment of capital into other resources that are absolutely necessary during the crisis. But also the economic impact of this response really is unknown right now. You know, you have, for example, elective surgery, surgery centers, surgical hospitals, really they're closed right now. They're not doing any cases. The same is true for, you know, other sorts of in-person elective visits. All of that is at a standstill. And so there is an immediate kind of wait and see element of what is going to come to pass, but immediately deals are on hold. I do think that, you know, there will likely be, you know, continued appetite for deals once we get through this. Perhaps a little bit of the wind has been taken out of the acquisition sales, if you will. But at least for the near term, that's what I'm seeing. In terms of maybe a little longer term outlook, you know, I think what we're going to have come to pass is, I mean, you use the word the new normal. I'm hoping it's more of a current normal and maybe not a permanent lasting impact, at least from an economic standpoint. But certainly, I think investors are going to have to reprice risk. I think a lot of the risks that have been in our economy, a lot of risks faced by small businesses in healthcare and everywhere, really haven't been adequately priced because we never foresaw that such dramatic volatility could exist. And so that's going to have an impact on multiples for sure going forward. Multiples are also impacted by growth expectations. And so if we do have a mid to long-term deceleration of our economy or certain business sectors, that'll also have a downward impact on multiples. And then even with the relief packages that are being deployed, I think it's likely that for those businesses that do survive, and many simply may not, I think we'll have significant debt levels higher than we have seen historically that are going to have a suppressive effect on equity values. May not, you know, change overall values of entities, but all things being equal, if you have, you know, an entity that gets through this and we kind of get through the immediate risk repricing with those higher debt levels, that just shifts some of the value from the enterprise away from equity holders and into the hands of the debt holders.
Well, we really appreciate that insight, Jason. Really quite formative. And, you know, as we're thinking about the current normal or the new normal, I also hope that it's more of a current normal than a long-term shift to how we consider these types of events in our society. But are there any sectors within healthcare that might have valuations that are positively impacted coming out of or throughout the COVID-19 crisis?
I think that is certainly going to be the case, both in healthcare and in other industries. But if you just think about kind of the obvious beneficiaries of this crisis, my mind immediately turns to telehealth providers and telehealth platforms. You know, we're seeing almost a forced push into those platforms right now, and an easing on multiple regulatory compliance issues from HIPAA to licensure, et cetera, as well as changes in the reimbursement environment for telehealth and remote health access. I do think that for a very good period of time will be the new normal. And I think that whereas a lot of the population was kind of resistant to adopt those models from a consumer standpoint, I think this fear in the back of their mind that there, you know, could be an underlying health issue of visiting a healthcare facility may translate into a lot more telehealth, even beyond what we're currently experiencing. So certainly that is going to be a sector that I think will benefit from this. And again, not just the providers, but also the IT and technology providers that help facilitate the use of telemedicine and telehealth. You know, other sectors that may be positively impacted. I think diagnostic testing and labs certainly are going to see an uptick in volume, and maybe for the foreseeable future. The immediate issue is overwhelming, but I think as we become more cautious as a society, we may see more tests being done or a larger battery of tests when we have patients present with what we may have historically thought of as a just go home and wait sort of symptom. And then thinking about kind of other sectors that are still kind of obvious, but a little bit less certain, I think drug and device companies will benefit, particularly those that are able to bring a solution to the marketplace for COVID-19. But we're seeing some collaboration and encouragement of collaboration across companies from the federal government that perhaps didn't exist before. And I think that will, in the near term, be positive. And then, the one area that I'm kind of on the fence in terms of my expectations, at least, is how hospitals will fare from this. We've seen a lot of press that hospitals are going to be negatively impacted by the COVID-19 response, and I think certainly, the shift away from high reimbursing elective surgeries and surgical cases. Is going to be a downward pressure on revenue and profitability for a lot of health systems. But I'm also seeing reports, in fact, just this morning, Modern Healthcare posted an article, and I think they referenced a Fair Health that indicated the COVID-19 response was likely to generate $558 billion in network equivalent collections from inpatient and other COVID-19 response. We also see in the stimulus package that was released, there's $130 billion in stimulus for hospitals. So obviously increased occupancy is going to potentially have a favorable impact, but that's going to be offset by the enormous increase in costs that they're incurring right now to staff and make emergency measures available to patients, and also the shift away from what has historically been the more profitable elective procedure side of the ledger.
Do you think, Jason, do you think we'll see that elective surgery side come back later this year? In other words, for those folks whose surgeries have been either canceled or delayed, do you think we'll see an increase in the number of elective surgeries in the second half of 2020? Are we thinking about that spilling into 2021?
It's hard to say. I think a lot of it's going to come down to fear and anxiety among the consumer mm-hmm. base, because the demand for those services, you'd have to, put it on kind of a continuum, right? I mean, if you have a knee that needs to be replaced, you're going to get that done as soon as you can after this is all said and done. And, if it's a cosmetic procedure, that may be delayed a little bit longer just to let everything settle down. But I think the demand for those surgeries didn't go away. It just got delayed. I think the bigger question is going to be, how devastating from an economic standpoint is the delay for surgery centers and surgical hospitals, because the ongoing costs that exist in those facilities and the complete absence of revenue, that's a huge working capital drain.
Sure.
I'm cautiously optimistic that it will return in the second half of 2020. And I think, what happens over the next couple of weeks in terms of flattening the curve and rolling out some positive messages on this from both a health and an economic standpoint will really dictate how that plays out in the latter half of the year.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's turn for a little bit now, Jason, to compensation valuation. I think one of the questions that folks have is whether, compensation arrangements that depend on a fair market value evaluation, whether they adequately address this type of disruption. And I think we're learning that most really don't adequately address this type of worldwide pandemic-like disruption like we're seeing with COVID-19. What are some of the immediate challenges that will be faced from a fair market value standpoint? And how do you think physician compensation models should be modified or need to be modified moving forward?
Sure. So, you know, this is one where, again, things are changing quickly. And I think that the regulatory guidance around, you know, compensation arrangements is going to have to adapt as well as the economic models we use to determine fair market value. But certainly, you know, just like with the business valuation commentary I gave, I think compensation models, there are some obvious immediate impacts that we need to get through, some kind of midterm less obvious, and then long-term solutions that we'll have to rethink and possibly redesign how we approach some of this. So diving into the immediate needs, currently we have a strong demand for staffing, obviously. We have hazardous environments with providers and other staff in hospitals and health systems working extended hours and difficult shifts. I think the immediate impact of that is, you know, how do you make sure that those on the front lines are being adequately compensated, and do we need to implement any sort of change in the pay model to reflect that? And I think, you know, as you think through the models that exist currently, I think providers under different models are going to be impacted in different ways. So, for example, if you're on a salary model, you know, that's a fixed salary plus incentive, and you go from working a normal workload to a super charged work burden, I think that needs to be modified. And it may not be set in advance for a term of the year, but it certainly is going to be the case where you've got to convert that to something else that adequately reflects the efforts that are being made by these providers on fixed compensation models. On the other side of that equation, I think you have a large contingent of physicians that are on you know, productivity-based models, whether that be percent of collection or work RVU-based models, that are not on the front lines of this response and are being dramatically impacted in terms of their ability to provide services. So there, again, it's going to be a situation where how do you maintain the continuity of your workforce on these models, and is there a justification and also a compliance protocol that permits providers on those models to be compensated. And I think the alternatives there are kind of the opposite, maybe switching them over to a fixed salary based model for some period of time, or potentially provide stipends or other sorts of supportive pay during this kind of weird time that we're in right now.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I can tell you, Jason, sorry to interrupt, but I can tell you just even in my own experience, working with fair market value, evaluations and methodologies, this certainly, isn't the type of, you know, unexpected consequence or experience that we take into account generally in a fair market value methodology. So this is new, this is novel territory.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I think that's, in times like this, it really highlights the importance of working towards rational solutions to challenges like this, because we don't have a playbook, right? And I know that fair market value and commercial reasonableness are often thought of as kind of two sides of the same coin, or two sides of the same coin of importance, I guess. There are certainly different analyses, and OIG guidance on that is made very clear in the recent proposed rules that they are definitely different. But I think developing a commercially reasonable rationale for the change is really important right now to, you know, and anything that advances the health of the patient population and provides continuity of service, I think, is a reasonable justification. The secondary piece to that of determining the appropriate economics, I think we have to make informed judgments based on experience and using, you know, informed judgment on what's appropriate. And that may not be able to be paired with, you know, a third party opinion. It may be the case that we simply need to take action to maintain continuity of workforce and staff and come back and retest it later. And again, that presents some regulatory challenges. But I think we all need to think creatively during this time to make sure that the clinicians, particularly those on the front lines, are being adequately supported, and those that are sitting on the sideline unwillingly, that they are also not put into a place where, you know, they're not able to to maintain the practices or maintain adequate level of service for those needs.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Two areas, when we decided we were going to talk about fair market value, a couple of questions I had that might be unique to this particular situation. So first on hazard pay, any particular thoughts on how to account for hazard pay in connection with a COVID-19-like crisis or the current crisis? And then also I'm interested in your thoughts on smaller or local hospitals and health systems and how they can remain competitive from a fair market value perspective in this current scenario. So maybe we start with hazard pay and then go to local and regional hospitals.
Yeah, so hazard pay, I mean, we're hearing a lot about this, and I think there is at least a compelling logical argument that hazard pay may be appropriate. At the same time, you know, particularly as it pertains to infectious disease, you know, specialists and you know, critical care intensivists, ER doctors, those are clinicians that are working in inherently dangerous or hazardous positions in any event. And so there may be some degree of that already baked into some of the compensation models, but certainly a response like what we're seeing right now to COVID-19, it's unprecedented. So there's not a playbook, there's not any sort of historical reference point that we can lean on in the healthcare sector that says this is how we ought to deal with this. You know, for me, my recommendation would be to look at it on a case-by-case basis. I certainly think that, you know, the extreme conditions that many clinicians are being forced to work in right now, whether that's, you know, inadequate equipment, you know, having to reuse equipment because of supply shortages, extended hours where, you know, their own immune system and energy levels are being depleted and perhaps making them more susceptible to infection. You know, there are a lot of compelling arguments that would suggest hazard pay may be appropriate when you are truly on the front lines. I think the question then becomes how do we quantify that? And again, we don't have there's no salary survey data that we can point to and say, oh, there we go, there's the premium. And so we're going to have to look to proxies that are in the market, you know, whether that's, conflict zone pay for military personnel or non-military personnel. You can see in certain instances, you know, response to highly dangerous areas, where you have aid workers, perhaps, you know, in an Ebola outbreak or something like that. It's difficult to translate that data directly to providers, but I think that looking at the underlying mechanics of those sorts of scenarios and looking at the way that the pay has been modified, I think that's one approach that is at least logical. It's going to take some finessing, and I think there's not a single right and perhaps not a single wrong answer either in how that's addressed. But I do think it is a difficult challenge for appraisers to deal with right now. And I think there's going to be a lot more qualitative elements to that analysis than perhaps a typical fair market value analysis would entail.
Certainly. No, that's really informative and helpful thoughts as well. I think the sort of, some of the higher level points I'm hearing today and please correct me if I'm wrong, are, you know, there's increased flexibility in connection with fair market value methodologies in a scenario like this, that accounting for hazard pay might fall into that flexibility as well. If you're a small or local regional hospital or health system and you're assessing this situation from a fair market value perspective, what are some of the considerations that you would keep in mind? How do these smaller health systems remain competitive in the marketplace? What are your thoughts on that question?
Yeah, you know, that's one of those scenarios that it's kind of hard to contemplate the various scenarios that may come to pass in this particular situation. We haven't seen the same level of, at least as it pertains to the COVID-19 crisis, we have not seen rural areas be impacted as much as, you know, highly populated metropolitan areas like, you know, those in California, New York, Seattle. And so, you know, in terms of remaining competitive, I think you have to, again, do the same sort of qualitative analysis that is required in the discussion we just had on hazard pay. And that is take a look at the particular needs of that system. What are they trying to accomplish? What are the specific needs and how have they changed as a result of this crisis? And in some cases, that may be availability. In some cases, that, you know, maybe, you know, we need to, you know, again, use like a telemedicine-based model that perhaps we're not using historically. And how do we fund that? How do we make sure that these providers that are in our environment or who are experiencing little or no pay right now, how do we support them? So I think it's going to be on a case-by-case basis, depending upon the needs of a particular hospital, the medical specialty, and the community. But again, I think that using any rational valuation methodology paired with adequate qualitative support and analysis of the situation is how I would approach that situation or those situations.
Well, thanks for that, Jason. I mean, I think the message is pretty clear, you know, a rational approach and a flexible approach are appropriate in response to this particular situation. We just have a couple of moments left here in our podcast, Jason, and I'm wondering if there's any other impacts that you anticipate from a fair market value perspective as a result of COVID-19.
Yeah, so there's two things that I think are going to be particularly challenging from a fair market value standpoint. The first is, you know, how we deal with quality pay or at-risk pay during this time. You know, the government's already indicating a willingness to adjust the reporting period, benchmark and or delay reporting on some of the quality measures from a reimbursement standpoint for MIPS and otherwise. But for clinicians that are participating in a model where a significant portion of their comp is based on, you know, attainment of quality metrics, pay for performance, I think it's going to be heavily impacted because of this. And I think the right way to deal with this is to try to isolate the anomalous period of time and eliminate that from the equation. I think we're going to have to do some analysis, much like we do in business valuation, where, you know, we go through a process of normalizing performance and we try to isolate and eliminate non-recurring or atypical events. I think we're going to have to do that here with compensation on pay for performance models, where we isolate this period of time and neutralize it. I think that's the only thing that's rational and economically fair for clinicians. The other thing that is more of a long-term issue, and that is, you know, valuation is as a function, it's always a forward-looking process, but we often look to the past to find proxies and data that we use as a benchmark to measure that. And that's particularly true with compensation valuation. You know, we look at historical-based compensation survey data, and we use that as a means to value future compensation models. This is going to create two problems for that. First is we're going to have a 2020 reporting period that is going to have a whole bunch of noise, if you will, in the data across all specialties. And so as MGMA and SEA and AMGA do their reporting, I think they're going to have to do some scrubbing of the data sets, whether that is something similar to what I just said on quality, where they isolate the period of time for reporting, or they add some questions into their surveys to try to identify and quantify the impacts of the COVID-19 response on providers by specialty. But certainly for appraisers, as we look back and start to use those surveys, I think it's going to be critically important that we use care and diligence to eliminate both the positive, if there are positive effects on specialties, and the negative impacts of this response to appropriately measure comp. And then one final thought on that is, as we're modeling comp, again, it's such a crazy scenario that's coming to pass right now. I think a lot of the analysis that we do, we tend to believe that physicians are going to operate within fairly narrow bands of whether it's productivity or reimbursement or whatever the benchmark is. We recognize there's a possibility for volatility, but within fairly narrow bands. I think now the onus on appraisers is to think about what happens if volatility is well beyond what is normally expected, and what's the reality that something like this could happen again, whether it's a different disease or other disruption in our economy, certainly something like wartime or economic disruption could have similar sorts of impacts. So I think we need to be careful not to turn a blind eye to the real risk and volatility that underlies those comp models, and do some sensitivity testing within wider bands of variability than perhaps we have done historically.
Well, Jason, thanks so much for this and for all of the enlightening thoughts and information today. As you mentioned several times, this is an unprecedented situation, and this is one of those topics where you might not necessarily join fair market value and COVID-19 response as topics that are interconnected, but you can see just from this conversation today that there's a significant downstream impact on nearly everything that we do in healthcare and this unfolding crisis. So, Jason, thanks again so much for your time. Is there a place where our listeners can get a hold of you and reach out to you?
Yeah, absolutely. All of my contact information is available on my website. That's rootvaluation.com. Located here in Denver, Colorado, Mountain Time. So feel free to give me a call or shoot me an email, and happy to talk through any of these issues.
Great. Well, thank you, Jason. Really appreciate it. And Steve, thanks so much for co-hosting today.